Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Technology Uncorked. My name is Jeff Quattromani, and this show is brought to you by Navman. Now, for all the truckers out there, or guys who are towing boats, caravans, and things that exist behind the car or the ute, you need to be thinking about the length and the height of your vehicle when you're navigating. And something that I've seen from Navman, which I haven't seen from many other brands before, and especially you won't find this in Google Maps or Apple Maps, is awareness of your large vehicle. So if you're looking to get from point A to point B, are you actually being taken down a path that your vehicle can fit in terms of going under bridges or going under railway tracks, going through one-way streets? Are you actually being given the right path for your vehicle? And this is something that Navman assist with on the MyCam truck. It's a dash cam plus GPS model in one. It's got a larger 7-inch display, which actually helps for those big rigs, but you actually tell the unit the dimensions of your vehicle, and it will make sure that everywhere it takes you, it's going to fit, and you're not going to be one of those guys on the news who's gotten stuck underneath a bridge. This happens way too often, and it's quite embarrassing, especially if you've got branding on your vehicle. There's nothing worse than seeing your brand on a trailer wedged underneath a bridge. So do check out the MyCam truck. It's a dash cam and GPS. I'm a big fan of these types of two-in-one devices because, again, if you're a big rig, you're going to be on the road a lot. You want that dash cam anyway. You absolutely need that. But then having this excellent navigation on top of it, which is aware of the vehicle that you're driving, even more paramount. So do check it out. Go to navman.com.au. This actual unit is $550. Recommend retail price. I'm sure you can find it cheaper elsewhere. But do shop around and have a look. I just think that you don't want to be that person who's being taken down a street and suddenly you've got to back up or you're stuck. It's a pretty big problem and a pretty embarrassing one at that. Now, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other things today as well. Let's get on with the show. All right, now I'm actually giggling already a little bit because I just took a sip of the wine that we're drinking throughout the show tonight, and it's quite interesting. It's called the Jam Shed. It's a red blend. So it's got a mix of different wines in there. However, this thing is like candy. It's got this crazy, you know, remember Redskins? I think Redskins is still available. It tastes like Redskins and strawberry jam and other berries sort of mixed into one. It's really quite cool. If you love red wine, and this would go really well with just red meat as well, but gosh, I could enjoy a bottle of this on its own, just sitting on the back deck on a cooler evening probably. And just sampling this, I think it's delicious. It's such a fun wine to enjoy. And looking at the price, it's $18. Recommend retail price as well. So, you know, $18, you're going to have a lot of fun drinking this wine. It's hilarious. I have another sip of this because it's just, hang on. That is awesome. That is an awesome bottle. For $18, I know I've spoken about some expensive wines on the show before, but I don't know. Go out and get one this for the weekend and open it and share it with friends. You could have this for dessert, but you could absolutely just have it on its own. Awesome little bottle, Red Blend. Do check it out, $18. Now, today we're going to talk about a number of things beyond just delicious candy type wine. Perfect for Halloween, actually. If you're thinking about Halloween coming up and you want to have some candy but also have a glass of wine, just do the two in one. We're going to talk about a new camera from Arlo. Security cameras is always a big thing on the show. I always get a lot of people questioning me about it, wanting to know more about them as well. So Arlo has a new camera, which we're going to discuss. Have some amazing questions on the Boost hotline. Now, it's been only running for a couple of weeks now, and it's awesome to see all the SMSs coming through. If you haven't SMSed me yet, you still can, and we're going to bank them up because I'm trying to do about two questions per week on the show. So you'll be looking at 0467-439-078. And what's crazy is about 78% of my listeners come from Australia. However, we're answering a question today from the US, and I love the fact that this number is obviously accessible internationally. So thank you so much for your questions. Keep them coming, and we're going to get through two of those today as well, thanks to Boost Mobile. And then we're going to talk about two other things. Well, three other things technically, but a new vacuum. A new robot vacuum from Ecovacs. I wrote a story about this on 7 News last week, and we're going to talk about it because if you were still manually vacuuming your floors, we need to have a conversation, and that's what that will be about. Secondly, we're going to talk about phones and not the iPhone 12, as what will probably be the biggest topic in other news outlets and stuff like that this week as embargoes begin to drop. However, we're going to talk about the Pixel 4a and the Pixel 5. I've been testing them both, and I've got some amazing experiences with them, and I can't wait to tell you more about those as well. I mean, these are two smartphones that exist under $1,000 each, and it makes you wonder why you do spend more than a grand on any other smartphone. So we'll discuss that too. So lots to get on with. I'm having another sip, and then we are getting straight into our first story. All right, so we've spoken about Arlo on the show a number of times before. In fact, we've even had Arlo as a one-on-one interview, which you can go ahead and listen to in a previous episode. I love the idea that security cameras have become DIY. I love the fact that anyone can go and put a security camera up. It runs on battery. You stick it to your wall, stick it to an eaves of the house, wherever it is that you want to mount it, install an app on your phone, and bang, you're getting notifications when there's movement outside. You can talk back to them. They can talk to you through the camera and through your smartphone. It's amazing. And it's actually quite low cost as well, because you can just go out and buy a single camera unit. Now, Arlo have announced a new camera, and they seem to be announcing a lot of individual cameras. And this one is no exception. It's another individual camera. It's called the Essential XL Spotlight Camera. The biggest thing to note here is the XL. It's funny that they have the Spotlight name in it when it actually only has sort of like three LEDs inside the unit. It's not like the Floodlight model that has this massive wing on either side, which really can light up an entire driveway. Every camera should have some sort of LED light in them, so that if someone does come near that camera, the light comes on at nighttime and it allows you to get some color vision even in the nighttime. Now, the XL part is the biggest part, because the camera does 1080p pretty much as you would expect. But always been my biggest problem with these battery-powered cameras is just that it's powered by a battery, and that means you need to replace it fairly often. Depending on how much activity happens out in front of that camera, obviously changes how much you need to replace it. But to give you an example, I can fully charge one of my Arlo cameras, put it outside, and I have a barbecue area, and there's a camera that monitors that space. But if I go out there and have a barbecue, or we have friends around and we're in that space, that camera is going ballistic, recording all that motion, alerting my phone. Even if I turn off alerts, it's still capturing it all because it thinks that something's happening, as it should. And it's just chewing and chewing and chewing on that battery life. And, you know, while it might claim 3 months battery life, you actually end up with, you know, maybe a month because of that extra activity there. Whereas the one on my front door, which I love alerting me for when there is a courier or something like that at the door, it might record for 30 seconds at a time, maybe two or three times a day. And I actually probably only need to charge that, you know, closer to that 3 month mark. Now, to avoid that hassle, here is what Arlo has done. They have provided the XL. The XL offers homeowners up to 12 months of battery life on a single charge. The thing is not twice as long as a normal Arlo camera, but it's pretty long. It looks like it's had a good time. It's very stretched out. I'm getting sent one of these, which I'm curious to test. And obviously thinking about where I'm going to put it, I think it will be in that barbecue area and replace the one that's there at the moment. But I'm fascinated to see how this one is mounted. In the pictures, I'm seeing these wall mounts, which actually screw into the camera. It doesn't use the magnetic wall mount. And I usually use the magnetic one because it's a heck of a lot easier to take off when you recharge it. But this one looks like it's on a screw mount. I'm curious to see what that's like. But, you know, for 12 months of battery life, that's a big deal for me. So if I can charge cameras less, thank you. That's one less hassle. Running power to some of the spots where I have cameras is very difficult. And that's primarily why I haven't gone that path. I know some people are probably wondering why I don't just get a powered camera system. And I don't use the solar panels that I know you can also buy to add onto your camera system as well. So that's another thing that I'm missing. But this Essential XL Spotlight camera is going to be $279, available in November. Curious to see what it's like. It should be here with me today or tomorrow, and I'll have some thoughts for you on that later on. But again, SMS me if you've got any specific questions around that. I'll give you the number again. It's 0467-439-078. And let me know what questions you've got about that camera, and I can answer it in next week's episode or whenever I've found the right answer to that question. We'll make sure we get to it as well. Now, a real quick question. I had one question come through. Let me just make sure I check the name. We had a question come through from Laura. Laura asked about webcams. She says that there is a massive shortage in store and what kind of options I would have for her. And it's an interesting point. I've noticed it as well. If you go into an Officeworks, JB Hi-Fi, whatever it is, webcams are harder and harder to find because we're all working from home. If you didn't have a decent webcam in the past, you've probably gone out to go and get one for all the Zoom meetings that you're joining and things like that. Or even if it's just for connecting with friends. I know that a lot of people have needed to get webcams for that. Yes, your computers usually have a webcam built in, but they're pretty bad. Doesn't matter how much money you spend on a laptop, you tend to find those built-in webcams just aren't as good as the ones you get via USB. Logitech is the biggest name that people would know of when they think about webcams. And yes, they have a shortage. Here is my option. And it's an interesting one too, because it's something I'm about to experiment with myself. Canon, Nikon, Sony, and even a couple of other brands have all come out during this pandemic with software to allow you to use your digital camera, your digital SLR camera, or even your digital Micro Four Thirds camera to be used as a webcam. So if you've got, Laura, or anybody else listening, if you've got an existing digital camera, probably something you've never even used in such a long time because you've started using your phone to take photos, pull it back out. Download the software, go to the manufacturer's website, and you'll find it. I'm looking just quickly through Google, and I can see the Canon EOS webcam utility. There's one from Sony. There's one from Nikon. They're all offering this because they know that you've got these cameras, and there's a pretty good chance that you could use them as a webcam. Now, the reason I'm very fascinated by this is actually I think that if I pull out my old EOS 650D, which is an old digital SLR camera now, I actually think that with the lenses on that, I would actually get a better experience than I would with a traditional USB webcam. So I'm going to try and find a way to mount this thing above my monitor so I can actually start using it. And I think that's going to be one of your challenges, Laura, is finding a place for your camera, potentially finding a tripod to mount it on as well. I actually love using a Joby GorillaPod. It's pretty short. It's about 30 centimeters tall, but it's got arms, three arms that can literally wrap around anything. I've wrapped it around fence posts, trees, all sorts of stuff. But I'm going to wrap it around my shelf here and see if it holds on and gets that camera working. That's going to be my recommendation to you because, to be honest, if Logitech has run out of webcams, I don't really want to see you go too many other different brands. But try, if you've got a digital camera at home, and for everybody else, go to the manufacturer's website, download the tool. It's usually available for Mac and PC, and install it. It's a really great workaround and a nice way to continue using something you've probably forgotten about a long time ago. So thanks, Laura, for your question. Thanks to Boost. Now, again, I'm going to give that number out for everybody else. It's 0467-439-078. If you're from another country, it's +61 and drop the zero. So do send me a text and we can get in touch. Now, we are going to start talking about vacuuming because if you are still doing it manually, we need to have a talk. Now, vacuuming for me is something that I don't mind doing, actually. I don't mind doing it manually. We have a Dyson, and it's one of those stick vacs. The thing is a weapon. I can run around the house and get vacuuming done, usually while trying to listen to a podcast or something else. But for anybody who's busy, anybody who has a busy household, robot vacuums can absolutely fill the gap in your floor cleaning needs. And I've tested a bunch of robot vacuums before, and I think they've gotten to a point where they do a good enough job to be acceptable and to be worth the money. In the past, we used to find that they would miss a lot of things. They would get lost. Sometimes, I mean, in the olden days, when they used to bump into walls, they'd even drop some of their collections. So the bins would start to be unreliable, and they just weren't very smart. But now, my God, they're smart. So the navigation piece has been worked out to the point that most vacuums will actually do a mapping of your entire home with a floor plan. So if you ever need to draw a floor plan, just get a robot to do it. Seriously, it maps the place like crazy. And on your smartphone, you can then nominate rooms. You can label them and things like that. And you can literally just from your phone, just tap on the kitchen and send the vacuum to go in there and clean it. If you've got a smart speaker, you can actually even ask Amazon or Google to get your vacuum to head to the kitchen and clean up. So you could be literally sitting on the couch and just yelling out for the vacuum to go and clean up. It's crazy. The latest model has solved a problem that all robot vacuums have had since the dawn of time. And it's one of the big reasons why people still like to use traditional vacuums is the bin. Now, the bin size in a robot vacuum is small. They're very slimline, and I love the fact that they're slimline because it means they can go underneath beds and couches and stuff like that. So I don't want my robot vacuum to be the size of a dog. I want it to be the size of a squirrel. Squirrel? Yeah, sure. But with that, they fill up pretty fast. Now, depending on the size of your home, it may actually fill up before it's completed cleaning your entire home. That means you might come home from work today and you'd hope the vacuum had been working while you were away, but it's actually half done the job because it was full. And you need to go and empty that bin. And you have to pull this little, it's about the size of a Coke can. You pull that out of the top, you shake it, you empty the thing out, you put it back in, and it may actually then continue on its path. And some of them now even remember where they've been so they can actually not double dose on a clean area. The new models though, and this is from Ecovacs, the one that I've been testing, it's the new D-Bot Osmo T8 Plus. Now, the T8 is a model in itself. The Plus is the package. Now, what I mean by that is there is a new base station, and the base station can actually be purchased separately and even given on the T8 AIVI model, or Ivy, how it's pronounced. And the empty station is critical because here is a space where the robot is going to go and recharge, but it's also going to empty itself. So when it's full, or even every time it goes to recharge after finishing its job, it goes back, and then about 5 seconds after it mounts into its slot, almost the sound of a second vacuum triggers, which is actually the base station, and it sucks the contents from outside the bin into its own bin, right? So you've got a big bin where it charges, and you've got the little bin inside the vacuum. When the little bin drives up, it sucks everything out and puts it into the big bin. The big bin holds up to 30 days of dust and dirt. Now, I equate that actually to about 15, 17 vacuums of my place. So obviously, depending on the size of your home, how much carpet you've got, how messy, we've maybe got pet fur and stuff like that. It means that, you know, maybe every 15 or so times you send it out to clean the entire home, then you'll need to empty the big bin. You actually never will need to empty the small bin anymore because the base station will do that for you. And to be honest, it's the biggest change, in my opinion, to robot vacuums because the way you use it completely changes. So I can literally be asking that vacuum to go any time of day, whenever I like. It's always going to finish the job because if it doesn't, it's going to go back, empty itself, and then head back out back into the field. So if your house is huge and it fills up the entire vacuum comes back and goes, bro, I'm full, empties itself out. If it needs to recharge, it can, but it probably won't because this thing has like 180 minutes of battery life, so it's a lot. And it goes exactly back to where it last was and continues its work. The other thing about the T8 that's worth mentioning outside of this empty station is that it also mops. Now, the connection on the back is where you have a small water tank. And the water tank also has a cleaning cloth. And I've referred to this before, and it's probably a bad metaphor that no one wants me to use. But if you imagine a dog with worms, it walks with its front feet and scrubs along the grass on its backside. And that's what happens with this vacuum in mopping mode is essentially it's vacuuming at the front, sucking up all the debris in front of it, and then it's dragging its butt along the floor, which is a moistened cloth to actually provide a type of mopping experience as well. Now, again, with that, that's fantastic. The thing I learned, and it was quite funny the way I learned it, but when I set this vacuum up in the first place, I put it in my office, and my office is carpeted. And what I learned very quickly was that when the mopping attachment is on the vacuum, it rightly so does not want to drive on carpet. So when it was finished its job and was returning back to the base station, it stopped at the door and was kind of like trying to get in without going on the carpet, which basically just had it pacing along the front of my entryway into the office. And it's quite funny to watch, but something to learn, this unit needs to be on hard surfaces. You need to find a place, whether it's inside a laundry, inside the kitchen. I've seen some people put them in pantries. Sometimes they put them in the dining area, whatever it is. You need to find a place to put it that's not carpeted, or always remember to take off the mopping part off the back, which you can do. The vacuum will actually happily go ahead and do its business with the mopping segment removed. So it looks like the bumper of a car has fallen off, but it still works. But it's something to consider when you are placing one of these units with a mopping attachment. It's the first time I've actually used a robot vacuum based in the office because it keeps things out of the way. But yeah, if you do that, mopping station or the mopping feature doesn't really work properly. So keep that in mind. The empty station only empties. That's the last piece, in case you're wondering. It doesn't refill the mopping water jug. That'd be kind of cool if it did, but then you'd imagine you need to have water stored into the empty station. Kind of complicated. But if you want something that's just going to be on a schedule or on demand, whenever you want, it's going to get the whole house mopped, vacuumed, whatever you like, and empty itself, man, this is crazy stuff. And the last question to answer here, the price. So the T8, just the T8, is $999. But if you bundle it with the empty station, it's $1,299. If you've got the T8 AIVI model, which I've spoken about in the podcast before, you can buy the empty station on its own for $299. So, you know, worth looking at if you have already got a robot vacuum, such as the T8 AIVI, here is the perfect accessory to be adding to it. It just is. I don't know, if you are still vacuuming your own floors, you need to be considering something like this for Christmas, birthdays, whatever it is. I love it now. They do a really good job. They really do. All right, the next question that we received on the Boost mobile line that anybody can text to, and I encourage you to do that, 0467-439-078, was from Carter. Carter in the United States, and I just know that because of the number that it was coming through on. But Carter wanted to know my thoughts and my opinion on helping him buy his next laptop. And, you know, he's tossing up obviously between Dell, and he also mentioned Apple as well. And that's fine. And I think, you know, for someone like myself, I use a Mac and I use a Windows computer. And if you are somebody who's tossing up between both of them, you need to take a step back in a way and forget about the computers for a second and think about what you need to do on them. And the way that I work mostly is in a browser. And the reality is that less and less people are using software. You know, more and more people are using everything inside a browser. And I don't know why I said it in that way, but I can't remember the time. Well, obviously I'm using some applications. I use GarageBand, for example, for my podcast. I use Microsoft Outlook and stuff like that for my email for work. But when I think about my personal life, I've got my Gmail in a browser. I use my Google Docs for so many things, whether it's spreadsheets or actual word processing. And then otherwise, I'm on websites. And it's crazy to me how little software I now use. So straight away up front, whether you're choosing between an Apple or a Windows machine, think about the actual tasks you're doing and whether the software, if you do use software, is available on both or at least the one that you're looking at. So first and foremost, that's what you need to consider. The second thing is start thinking about the size and form factor. Now, every laptop is made slightly differently in how it's designed. If you ignore the operating systems for a little bit and recognize that you can usually do everything on any kind of laptop or operating system, when you actually stand in front of a laptop, and this is why I always encourage people to go into stores and touch and feel them before they buy them, put your hands down on the keyboard. Have a feel of where everything is. If you're an accountant, you probably want a full-size number pad. So will you need to buy a separate keyboard or is there one on the laptop itself? Because some have them. Look at where the touchpad is. Does it feel natural to use? Are there clicking keys or do you have to tap on the touchpad? Have a think about the cursors. Are you somebody who uses cursors on the keyboard a lot? How is that going to interact for you on that machine? So the actual button placement for me makes a big deal. The size of the laptop is important too, because if you're somebody who wants to take your laptop with you everywhere, you're going to want something that's light. When you have something that's light, you're sacrificing something. Okay, so if you take away, when you look at size and weight of a laptop, the bigger the laptop, the more space there is in the machine to stick stuff, and it usually means they can stick it in there more efficiently. That usually makes it a cheaper machine. So a 15-inch laptop is usually cheaper for the power compared to the same type of power in a smaller sized laptop. It's just the way it is. CD drives and DVD drives once upon a time used to only exist on those larger laptops. Now you pretty much don't find it on any. The biggest thing there is to think about the connections as well. Now, The Mac that I use only has USB-C ports. It hasn't got any USB-A ports, which is the larger one. That meant I had to buy a dongle that expands from USB-C to other USB ports, as well as a card reading slot, as well as HDMI, because that also wasn't there. So you have to think about what you're going to be connecting your laptop to. Maybe you're somebody who likes to use an external mouse or keyboard or monitor. How is that going to work with the machine as well? Battery life is a consideration. The other thing is obviously what level of performance do you get? Now, if we use the Intel example, you've usually got three levels of processors, i3, i5, and i7. i3 is really for somebody who's going to use their laptop every now and then, wants to have a bit of a click around, do some online banking, the basics. i5 is really for what I call student level, where people who are using Office applications, creating presentations, creation, really just working on the basic applications. Then you've got i7 processors, which is where I believe people who use Photoshop, people who edit videos, people who are working with large files, especially when it comes to photo and video editing, that's when you want the extra power, and that's where i7 comes into play. So for a lot of people, I would say the largest part of the bell curve, they sit in the i5 space. So I think that's a good sweet spot to be in. It also means that you're probably going to hold onto the laptop for a little bit longer. An i3 is more likely to slow down a bit quicker and things like that. The other thing that I would consider as well when you're comparing different laptops to buy is the screen. Is it a touch screen? And if it's not, that's fine, as long as you're comfortable with that. But also think about the resolution of the screen. Is it going to handle sunlight? Some screens are appalling in the daytime. Some of them are pretty good. Get in front of them, look at the features, look at the details, and understand that too. So they're the big things. Storage is obviously a factor as well. I think as much storage as you can get for your budget is important. You should always be backing up anyway, but it just helps to have that extra capacity, especially if you're on holidays or you travel for work and don't always have access to an internet connection. Having extra storage is important too. So they're really the biggest things that I tend to encourage people to look at or after they've already considered their budget. Tossing up between Windows or Mac is not the problem here. It's just not. Unless there's a particular application that you love on one platform or another, then sure. But I literally hot swap between these things on a daily basis, and then I open up Chrome. And guess what? It's the same thing once I've done that. But GarageBand, for example, which I use to record this show, is not available on Windows computers. So if I want to record my podcast, I don't do it on a Windows computer. I started off using Audacity or something like that, and it was just crap. It was crap. So I've gone back to using my Mac to do everything. But yeah, otherwise, look, it's part and parcel now. Go into store, get your hands on them, see what feels right. Haggle your butt off as well. Doesn't matter who the store attendant is. Haggle, and just make sure you get the best deal you can. Squeeze as much in because it's a pretty big investment. The last time I replaced my Mac was around, it lasted about 7 years, 5 to 7 years before I replaced it. So you want to make sure you pick wisely. It will last longer in the long run. I hope that helps. Carter, if you do have any further questions, you obviously have my number. Send me a text. And for everybody else listening, if you have a question, 0467-439-078 on the Boost helpline. Now, after this, we're going to review the Google Pixel 4a 5G and the Pixel 5. So it's been a few weeks now that I've been using an Android device. For a long time, anyone who's been listening to this show knows that even though when I test phones, I'm pretty quickly back on top of my iPhone. And it's just one of those things that everything is there. As much as I usually set up my test phones to be a complete replacement, something always pulls me back in to my iPhone. And it's a crazy thing, but it just happens that way. Now, for a little while though, my SIM card has been inside a Pixel 5. And I've also been playing with the Pixel 4a with 5G. These are two phones that are under $1,000. Pixel 5 is $999. Pixel 4a with 5G is $799. To give you a bit of context, the iPhone 12 in any of its form factors are above $1,000. So when you think immediately about the fact that these phones, especially the Pixel 5, which is, I guess, the flagship from Google, it's already going to save you some money if that is a factor. And I won't even get into the fact that the Pixel 5 or the 4a with 5G has more storage at a base level than any of the base model iPhone 12s. That's just another thing that's going to save you even more money as well. But to put these two phones side by side, they're very, very similar on the spec sheet. Very similar. A lot of their internal components are the same. The biggest changes are in the screen size. So it's funny, the 4a with 5G has an extra 0.2 inches on the display. It makes the device slightly wider by about 4 mil, and obviously makes the device a little bit taller by about 9 mil. So it's a slight difference. You may notice it in the hand. If you have them side by side, you certainly would. But that's the first thing to note with the Pixels. The cameras are identical on both. They're the same. The screens obviously are slightly different. Their pixels per inch is slightly different. They have the same resolution, but when you have a larger display, it's stretched out a little bit more, so the PPI is lower. That's fine. They both come in black. The Pixel 5 also comes in like this green, weird kind of green. The biggest thing, however, they're both 5G. And for people, and I've said this time and time again, I think I even said this when the iPhone 11 launched, you're buying a phone in 2020, you should be buying a phone with 5G. And it's not to say, well, 5G is not available in my area, so today I don't need a 5G phone. I agree. But guess what? The last time that most people replaced their phones was 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. You're holding onto these things for a lot longer. As a result, guess how much the 5G network is going to change during that time? If you're investing in a new phone, I recommend it's a 5G device. Now that Apple has obviously done it, you'll hear a lot of people saying, oh, 5G is now real. Well, 5G is real for a lot of people at any particular time of their ownership of the phone. If you bought an iPhone last year and it had 5G, if it had 5G, for example, it would still be a phone you're using this year, and it would still be a phone that you're using the year after that. So for so many people who are coming out saying, oh, 5G is finally a reality, I'm sorry, but the phone you bought last year should have been 5G as well. So do think about that when you are shopping around for a new phone. I think it should be 5G capable. Whether you live in Australia or another country, 5G is spreading very, very quickly. The benefits of 5G isn't quite realized yet. But guess what? Just like a lot of other things, you probably will start to use it more and more. Now that the speed is there, apps, brands, others will start to think of how to make use of the extra bandwidth. So 5G. Actually using the devices, and this is the part which you won't read on a spec sheet, these are the simplest form of Android that I've ever used in my life. Every other brand adds something to it, whether it's Samsung changing what the calendar looks like, changing how the email client is. Every brand likes to do something with it. Now, with the Pixel range, provided you've got a Gmail account, which I think you pretty much have to have, once you sign in, gosh, everything is there. Your email, your appointments, your contacts, it's all come through. Access to Google Photos is kind of the default. It's there. Automatic backups to the cloud is there. And Google actually give you unlimited storage of your photos on Google Photos at the high quality, not at the base level. So when you think about your storage of 128 gig, there's no expandable memory, but you're going to have cloud storage for as long as you own the phone, if not more. So think about that too. The fingerprint sensor is on the back. Now, I've been used to Face ID on an iPhone. On the Samsungs, I love the inbuilt in-screen fingerprint sensor. It works really well. Once I set up both index fingers to work on the back of the phone, it feels very natural. You tend to easily unlock the phone as soon as you pick it up. The one thing, though, is that when it's in your pocket and you put your hand in your pocket, if you just slightly brush that fingerprint sensor with your index finger or any of the fingers that are registered, that thing is unlocking so damn quick. And I actually, for that reason, I start to actually prefer Face ID, because at least it's only going to unlock when I kind of am looking at the screen. Whereas with a fingerprint sensor, it unlocks whenever you touch the sensor. And it made me start kind of think about how much I could potentially be pocket dialing people just because I've accidentally unlocked my phone, whether I plan to use it or not. And I have a feeling actually that Google could probably fix that by thinking about orientation or even using the camera to recognize that it's in my pocket and not actually out on display like it would be in my hand. So, I know, it was an interesting kind of thing to experience. The cameras on these, both of these phones, given that they're the same, is insane. And I was talking to one of the crew members at Studio 10 when I was about to talk about the 4A with 5G on TV. And he said to me, he said, "Oh my God, is that the Pixel 5? I said, "It's not, but I've got the Pixel 5 in my pocket." And I showed it to him. And he had pre-ordered the device and was so excited to be receiving it. He said, "I have to ask." He said, "How's the camera?" I said, "It's everything. It's everything about this phone." Yeah, the phone looks fine. It's pretty basic looking. You put a case on it, it's fine. The display is good. It's a 6-inch display. It looks fine. But you fire up that camera, and honestly, at nighttime is when you really notice it. You don't even have to have a steady hand. My hands are so far from being steady that it makes Muhammad Ali's look pretty still. But you take a photo with this camera, especially at nighttime, and it literally can see things that you don't. I've taken photos of even just sitting on the couch and my son's asleep next to me in a dark room. It's crazy how much color can come in and how much I can see in those photos than I can't even see with the naked eye. It's incredible. It only has ultra wide and regular type camera. So you're not going to get any optical zoom. You can obviously digital zoom, but you impede the actual quality of the image. But that would be what the third sensor could have been for had they decided to do that. Hence why Apple does it on the Pro. That's what they add. Whereas on the iPhone 12 standards, they don't have that extra zoom. So that would be the only thing missing if you're interested in that kind of thing. But the camera is exceptional, absolutely exceptional. The colors that it produces in daytime, the way it handles shade. So if you're standing undercover and you've got a bright light behind you, it's usually quite hard to get that person's face in focus. It was amazing how much I could light up every single component of a photo in the same way that I'm looking at it. I could actually start to produce regardless of brightness coming from different directions. Really nice camera. The one thing I'll add, and someone's probably going to tell me about this, but when you take video on a Pixel device, the video comes out fantastic, by the way. But then if I want to crop, just a simple thing, I want to shorten the start, I want to cut out some of the beginning, I want to cut out some of the end, something that I can do natively on an iPhone just by dragging in the side edges, you can't do that on a Pixel. I can't find the function. I can play the video, but I can't edit. There's no editing functions to the slightest degree of just cropping the start, trimming 5 seconds off the back, trimming 5 seconds off the front. And I had to go and get a separate app to do that. I found that really strange. And if there are anybody out there who uses a Pixel device, tell me where I've missed that function or tell me what app you use, because it was kind of strange to me that even when I jumped into the Play Store, there's not a lot of great apps to do that kind of video editing that isn't full of ads or making you pay for that. So I was really surprised. And maybe that is just one of the big advantages of iPhone, is that the video editing skills or features is quite amazing inside the device compared to what I found on the Pixel. And that's a weird thing for me. And I guess it's, you know, you take a few points off from that if you are going to be shooting video, for example, like I have a young child, you shoot a lot of video when you've got kids. And sometimes there's a really good bit in the middle and you just want to share that part. It took ages to trim and through other apps to actually produce that. I ended up using Adobe Rush. And that just seemed like overkill for me when all I wanted to do was crop the video. But, you know, there we were. That's what I was doing. The other thing, and it's an important one, is the Pixel 5 has wireless charging. The 4A with 5G does not. Okay, so if you are interested in wireless charging, maybe you're coming from a phone that already had it, jump on the 5 and not the 4A with 5G. It just doesn't have it. It also doesn't have waterproofing or water resistance. So in the summertime, be super careful. Maybe look for a case that's going to give you that extra protection if you can. But then interestingly, on the flip side, the 4A with 5G still comes with the 3.5mm headphone jack. So if you're somebody who loves to plug into your phone and listen, you can do that. Maybe you don't like charging Bluetooth earbuds, whatever it is. Interestingly, the other thing that I didn't love and why I talk about plugging in or using Bluetooth earbuds, the speakers built into the actual phone are very tinny, like sticking your phone into a plastic cup type tinny. No bass, no real definition of the audio at all. It would make me sound like Tweety Bird. It just doesn't sound good. So if you are looking to use your phone, maybe you play games, maybe you watch videos and you do this on speaker, or even if you take a lot of calls on speakerphone, yeah, it's probably a bit of a downscore. And something you'll definitely notice is the audio coming out of the phone itself ain't great. But if you're looking for a phone that can run every single Android app and well, takes amazing photos, looks good, has a great screen, has 5G, is going to easily last you the next 3 or 4 years, you're going to do so and spend less than a grand. And that's a pretty awesome thing. It also means that you're going to get guaranteed updates from Google immediately. There's a bunch of features on there that Google adds that you won't find on other phones, such as the way it does voice recording. You can also transcribe live what you're voice recording. If you're a student, put that on your lecturer's desk when the class starts, and you'll have a full transcript of everything that person said during that class. It's an incredible feature. Now, again, the price is the real golden ticket here, and it's impressive from Google to do that. If you're tossing up for a phone at the moment, you want to save a few bucks, you're going to get a good base size storage of 128 gig, great cameras, and 5G, all for less than a grand. So I'm not going to tell you which one to buy. It comes down to your budget and your preference. I can't live without wireless charging, so for me, it's a no-brainer. And given the fact they both have 5G and the same cameras, that would settle it for me. The slightly larger display you may not notice, it's worth looking at. Head into a store, put your hands on them, and see which one fits best. Let me know which one you're buying or maybe you've bought. I'm always curious to hear from you guys and hear your thoughts. Now, again, you can reach me at any time. Obviously, through social media, you can look me up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever you like. But mobile numbers, text me 0467-439-078. I will respond to you as well as hopefully answer your question on the show as well. So to Laura and Carter, thank you for your questions. You've had them answered this week. For everybody else, there's more to come next week. I promise I'm not forgetting about you all. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. I will speak to you again next Tuesday and next Thursday. Now, last week's interview was with Fitbit, or this week's interview was with Fitbit. Cracker show. If you've missed it, go back and listen to it. Gives you good insight behind the curtain at Fitbit and what they're working on. The next week one is with Dyson. I've already been talking about vacuums. Trust me, we talk about vacuums with Dyson, but we also talk about their ethos, the way they think as a culture, the product line and how extreme they are in the way they develop their products. They have a lamp, for example. Dyson sell a lamp, if you didn't know, and they sell it for $800. It's crazy. It's a desk lamp, for God's sake. But we ask them about that. So do tune in for that interview with Dyson. It's awesome. I'm a big fan of that interview. I think it's going to do really well. Clearly, a lot of people have liked the Fitbit one because it's gone bananas in the listenership numbers. Keep your suggestions coming of who we should be interviewing, and I'll keep chasing people as required. So thank you for listening. I'll speak to you again next week. Bye-bye.